This is Inside Asia, conversations with Asia's leading movers, shakers, thinkers, and provocateurs. Thanks for listening, and before we get any further, let me just take a moment to introduce myself. I'm Steve Hayward, one of the producers of the show, and the reason you're hearing from me instead of our intrepid host Steve Stein is because this is a bonus episode. Many of you will have already heard our episode featuring Steve Stein's extraordinary conversation with Rosalind Chow Koo, CEO of CXA, the first data-driven private insurance and workplace wellness exchange in Asia. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that conversation, it's not one you want to miss. Rosalind reveals to Steve how she and CXA are using data to deliver a more cost-effective, tailor-made, and simply better alternative to the insurance products offered by her competitors. Here's the thing. There was material from that conversation that we weren't able to fit into a single episode. But we didn't want to cut it completely. We thought it was important. It's a personal story about Rosalind's career, which has been anything but a straight line. Whether you're in business or education or government, one subject with which you're probably engaged is the question of what makes one person successful, able to disrupt one of the most entrenched industries, for example, just as Rosalind has done, and another not. A particular set of competencies is required, of course, but there's always something else, something ineffable. How do you get at that essential, hard-to-grasp ingredient? Now here's Steve Stein's conversation with Rosalind Chow Koo about how she got where she is today.
I would like for you, if you wouldn't mind, to take us back a little bit in time to your earlier days, your childhood, because it's a fascinating story. Would you mind just about kind of where you grew up and where you were born, something about that?
Yeah, so I was born in San Francisco to two really, really strong parents. So my father had been an illegal immigrant hiding in the U.S. He landed in Mexico off a dragon boat, somehow made his way up to Chinatown in San Francisco and hid for 40 years.
He took a dragon boat across from Hong Kong, originated in Hong Kong.
From China.
Where in China?
19. Yeah. So in Canton.
Okay.
So he left there. But by the time he was 59 years old, he decided he wanted to have children. And there were no legit women in Chinatown, San Francisco at that time.
Explain that. So, for those listeners who are in San Francisco.
Yeah, so there may have been a lot of prostitutes that he didn't want to marry.
Right, fair enough.
Who he didn't want to be the mother of his children. So gave himself up, and luckily he was given amnesty and was made a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
So he went to Hong Kong, was introduced to lots of women, but met my mother. Unbeknownst to him, she did not tell him that she already had two children. So they got married, went back to San Francisco, popped out more kids. After my brothers were born, my mother finally told my dad, by the way, I left two daughters in China. Can you sponsor them?
Oh, years later then.
Years later. She didn't tell him right away. Yeah. She waited till the boys were born and it was too late for him to do anything.
And were you born yet?
I was born. I was first.
All right. Okay.
And my mom told my dad, look, she was a property owner with her family in China. And of course, the communists came, took away the property, sent her mother to labor camp. And so my mother left her two daughters behind with her sister to make money for the family. That's why she ended up in Hong Kong.
Well, was your father empathetic and sympathetic with the situation, or did he struggle with that when he learned?
I was too young to know, but I was there when my sisters came. So however the struggle, they came. And by that time, we were living in Los Angeles because my parents wanted to own property. But the only thing they could afford was in the middle of Watts. And when my sisters arrived, it was the Watts riots.
And this is the Watts, one of the most notorious housing estates in America, right?
Yes. So this happened with the rioters coming. So the National Guard was called in after 6 days.
Of you arriving?
Yeah.
of when you guys moved there.
I mean,
So this was your introduction to LA.
Yes.
And your sisters from China were saying, what in God's name are we doing?
Exactly. They wanted to go back to China, but too late. Right. And so they come. And when they came, they actually ran home from their high school because they were burning down buses and all the shops. You know, people were looting everywhere. And my father was outside with the police keeping the rioters from coming into our house.
So then how did that all play out then?
So luckily, the police stopped them all, but we had a lot of broken windows. And also during that period, my brothers and sisters and I were bullied a lot. So we all learned to run really, really fast.
Yeah. And I guess at some point, but you're not running away, you're now running towards. So in one way or the other, this running skill has worked to your benefit.
Yes, because I got taller.
Yeah, right.
I got taller. Right. I no longer have to run away from danger. Yeah. So, yeah. But that's why I don't have a fear of risk.
Yeah, apparently that's the impression. So when at one point did you decide, okay, it's time for me to move out of LA? Were you able to go on to college? Did you have the money to do it?
Yes. Yeah, so I went to UCLA. I was an engineer, and I graduated from engineering school, but took a job in Iowa because it sounded like a really cool job.
Which is another version of going to Watts Estate.
It was. Yeah. And what of course this would happen. I walk into that factory and the first thing they told me was, you are the first Asian. We're all white, right? Yeah. So I was the first Asian to walk in that plant and everyone had questions for me about China, Japan, and Korea, but of course I've never been to Asia. But I made shit up after a while.
And weren't you were the first woman as well?
Not the first woman, yeah. Just the first Asian. Okay. But okay. They also told me I had to manage 33 men who were all older than I was, and mostly farmers and factory workers.
And you'd never managed anyone before?
No, I was 21, so I was really, really a bad manager of older men.
How did you sort it out, or did you pretty much throw it up and said, this is not for me, I'm gone?
I stayed for two whole years.
Yeah, well, you must have sorted it out then, right?
Every day I would run track and count the number of days until the 2 years. It was really hard because I felt like a substitute teacher. Okay. I was not good. It got better. I got better over time. And because I worked so hard, my team actually felt sorry for me. So they started helping. But I was there during a crucial time for P&G. We were introducing just in time. Oh. So the factory used to run three shifts, just kind of build up the inventory. But they decided only manufacture what sold. Mm. So only when stores run out of something do you build more. So sometimes we have a three-hour shift, sometimes a three-week shift. But what it meant is we had to wash out the line at any time.
Yeah.
And order the materials just beforehand. And so everyone had to be trained in every job versus having third shift washout, because I used to work on third shift with the washout crew, but most of the time I spent in the factory searching for the crew because they would be sleeping under the boxes. So obviously I had no respect.
but you weren't just managing a group of people in a status quo industry. You were doing a change management project.
Yes, I was in charge of the change management. Okay. As a bad leader, you can imagine.
Well, at least you see what it was. But then 2 years ends and you leave, and what do you go on to do?
I applied to business school, and luckily Columbia gave me a full ride, gave me a fellowship. And I think they did it because no one else had such a hard job at 21.
So, is that what they told you?
Yes.
Or that's your assumption?
Yeah, that is my assumption.
Yeah.
But part of what I had to do as a fellowship recipient is recruit the new fellows to come to the school. And I was put in charge that weekend when we were recruiting of an Asian woman, of course. And unfortunately, while I was taking her out to show her Manhattan, she got mugged. When I wasn't looking, I went to make a phone call. She got mugged. All I heard was, ah! Then I look behind me, she's on the ground, and I see some guy running away with her purse. So, of course, I scream out, stop him, he's a thief. And I start running after him, and 20 people follow me. And this mob chases this poor little guy all the way down the Riverside Drive. Because there were so many of us running after this guy, we were lucky that a giant tractor trailer of policemen, a building had just fallen down in the city, saw us and rescued him.
Rescued him.
Yeah. Because the mob was going to catch up.
Was he pleading to, please arrest me now?
Yeah, I know. This angry mob with this girl.
Yeah.
And so the police chief said to me when he saw me, what would you have done if you would have caught him? Yeah. Of course, I don't know, right? I'm just running.
It was, oh, you've been managing 30 men. You could threaten anything and get away with it.
Because I'm just going to run after you.
So at this point, you realize you're not an engineer. You're not a factory manager. You're definitely not a recruiter. That's not working out.
No.
So it's a process of elimination to arrive at a job or a career that's going to give you satisfaction and the ability to succeed. Yeah.
So I end up working on Wall Street. Process of elimination. I become a banker.
Yeah.
I actually had two choices, either become a social worker or a banker, because I wanted to do social work. But
why were those choices? Those are completely different.
After they gave me the offer of $12,000 or like 10 times that amount, then I decided to be a banker.
What was this? I've never heard you tell the story of the social worker. What were you going to do in New York City? You were going
to
be working?
So it's what I used to do in Los Angeles. I used to run a juvenile delinquency center and a children's center. I was in charge. Don't know why. So in New York, I wanted to do the same. And I actually did a lot of volunteer work.
Yeah. Okay. So you figured, now I'll take it into the career. I'll make a career out of it.
Yes. Yes. Because I was a juvenile delinquent and I can manage them. I understand you.
It's a good theory. Okay. So anyway, you went to Wall Street, talk about delinquents. And then in Wall Street, what did you learn?
So I actually had 8 jobs in 8 years. So I actually learned business and I actually learned how to manage well. They gave me coaches, but I have to tell you, I almost got in trouble in one of my early roles. What happened was that when I was in strategic planning and marketing, there was this really unbearable bully who bullied my team unfairly. So what I did was I followed her out the door and kept following her. She kept trying to walk away from me. And by the time we got to the elevator, I shoved her against the wall.
I just need to pause for a second. So this is audio. You can't see Roslyn, but you don't strike me as a threatening or a dangerous or a physical person. What's going on here?
No, she was much bigger than me.
Yeah.
But by then, I was really pissed because I was bullied all my life. So I hate people being bullied. So of course I go and shove her. My team was really happy, but the management was not. And so they told me that you could take the girl out of the ghetto, but not the ghetto out of the girl.
Did they really say that?
Yes. And they sent me to executive coaching. Good thing they didn't fire me. But what I asked them was, well, why didn't anyone tell me these were the rules, right? You never mentioned you can't physically abuse people.
Yeah, I think not everyone's seen The Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, there's a lot of abuse going on over there. You're just right in sync with everything.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. But they fixed me, so.
Okay. Amazing success story. We're going to be watching you in the months and years to come. And thanks so much for taking time out.
Thank you.
That was my conversation with Roslyn Chow Koo, founder and CEO of CXA, the first private insurance and workplace wellness exchange in Asia. For more information, to download our other episodes, and to read more about Roslyn and her extraordinary business model, head to www.insideasiapodcast.com. Until next time, this is Steve Stein saying, come in from the outside on Inside Asia.